This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon, Joy listeners. It is time for Sunday Arts Magazine with David and Brendan.
Hello, Brendan.
Hello, David. Now, before we go any further, big thank you to Andy.
Yes, we love Andy's show.
We love it.
He plays such a wonderful selection of songs. Some I absolutely love and others I think, why would you? But hey, music taste is so different, isn't it?
It's subjective as well. So, I love it. I love it. So, thank you for Three Chords and the Truth. Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of the truth, that is what our show is about.
The truth?
Truth, love, and everything in between.
Right.
And a bit of everything. But what a great week it's been. We've kicked off Midsummer at the carnival last Sunday.
That's right.
We had a fabulous, fabulous day there. Mm. I'm still sunburnt. flaking up a storm. Absolutely disgusting. But what a great week it's been already. I've fitted in a couple of things, and I'm sure you have as well. We're going to get into one of those in a little bit. Mm. But we do have, coming up in the show, we've got the wonderful Daniel Whithouse.
Yes.
So we're really excited to talk to him.
Yeah, because you're thinking to yourself, is he an artist?
Mm.
But in this case, we're going to look at him in a very different light because he's written two books as well, as well as putting a show on as part of Midsummer. So, interesting story, because it's a non-writer writing a book, which is a hard process.
Extremely hard. Yeah, but so, I think, determination is very much a part of that. Mm. And he's a very, very determined man.
Yeah.
So we're going to peel back a few of the layers of Mr. Whithouse today.
Absolutely.
Now, should we get into some movies?
Of course.
Let's
do
it.
You love your movies.
I am banging for this because obviously it is Oscar season. There's been some weird decisions, some kind of token decisions in the Oscar process this year.
Yeah.
The biggest one, I feel, was American Sniper. It's done huge things, made over $100 million over the sort of extended weekend in the US. It's a fine film. I have seen it.
Right.
It's put together very well. Clint Eastwood, he's a great director.
He is a wonderful director.
Yeah.
And picks incredible topics to talk about as well.
Yes.
And I think this is probably one of the most controversial topic that he's picked.
It's a really interesting one, though, because in his interviews, because he's sort of a conservative Hollywood elite, he sort of bucks the trend of sort of these liberal, like lowercase L liberal types in Hollywood. But even it's weird because he's sort of come out and said, I'm not pro-war. This is actually quite an anti-war movie. However, the right faction in the US is kind of taken this film and said, woohoo, go American soldiers, this guy's a hero, but he hasn't gone that far.
Yep.
But then watching the film, it's sort of, it's not that nuanced, really. It still kind of puts this guy up on a pedestal. And if anyone that doesn't know, he's sort of this prolific American sniper in the Iraq War who had around 150 kills during his time, I think three times over there.
But he was a family man.
He was a family man, but in the film, it sort of shows the impact that has of that kind of a career on the family. And
who does it star?
Well, it's got Bradley Cooper,
right,
who is quite impressive in the role. He adds some sort of nuance to the character.
Now, I hear he bulked up for it.
Yeah.
And he got the role that he's playing, the accent down perfectly.
Yeah.
Even to the extent that the wife of the original sniper said it sounded just like him,
yeah.
Which is very, very good.
Well, yeah, and Bradley Cooper's one of those sort of dark horses. Up until a few years ago, he wasn't playing the sort of these strong roles, but David O. Russell sort of got him more noticed for his smaller roles and more of a character actor role.
Yeah.
So I think that's what helped him get
well,
this far.
Well, I suppose, you know, it's nice that he gets out there and made lots of money with those Hangover films, which I haven't seen one of them never will. But you know, like, and got his name out there. So now he can make these more edgier films, which is good. And he's been nominated for an Academy Award with this, hasn't he?
But I don't think he has a real chance.
Yeah, well, I don't think anyone's in the race, are they? It's just all Michael Keaton.
It's Michael Keaton, and I'm going blank on the other. No, I've lost it. But there is another person sort of in the race, but I think Michael Keaton's sort of a shoo-in to win that one.
Well, there was early talk that Ralph Fiennes was going to be, and he didn't get nominated.
He didn't get a nom, but I'm just putting it out there. Grand Budapest Hotel, I think, may take out the best film.
Oh, really?
Oh, I
because there are people that absolutely me and you love it, and I've seen it twice and can't wait to see it again because it's been, you know, like months and months since I saw it. But there are a lot of people that didn't like it.
I think a lot of people are adverse to Wes Anderson's style in general, which, depending on the film, I kind of can be. The Darjeeling Limited, I think it was. I didn't really grasp that, but that's probably because I really don't like Adrian Brody, but that's another story. but Wes Anderson, he's very sort of iconic and laconic as well. He's sort of, if you love him, you really do love him. If you're sort of on the fence, it really depends on the film and what the subject matter is.
And the look of it was just beautiful.
Absolutely stunning. And so at the very least, it needs to win sort of costume design, set design, or production design, I think they call the category. Just so beautifully put together. It really was like this heightened reality, but you could tell it was all practical. Well,
I was gasping a lot of the time, you know, to myself. And I went by myself, and it was a half-empty cinema, which I love.
Yes.
And sat off by myself, and I'm so glad I did, because I was doing, you know, like a lot of the time, you know, when all of a sudden it was a scene that just looked incredible, you know. It was a lot of fun, and a lot of fun.
Even down to the packaging of the cakes and the delicacies in the film. Oh, my gosh.
The library.
And the library.
The library. Was,
okay, we could go on.
Stop. We're not even talking about that film.
No.
It's your fault, Brendan.
But it is topical because the Oscars are coming up very, very soon. So I'm sort of making this mad dash to sort of see everything. So I kind of, you know, have an informed decision of who I want to win and who I think deserves to win.
Okay, well, we actually must do your prediction the week before.
Yes, yes.
And just to see how right you are.
Well, I'm getting very close to seeing all of the films that are nominated, at least for the main
major
things,
and
especially all the acting roles as well. Okay. So, yeah, I think it's quite nice to sort of see everything so you can have a clear idea of who you want to win or who deserves to win.
Who deserves. Now, what else have you said?
Now, another one that is getting a little bit of attention. Now, this is contention. We were speaking before the show. The film is called Wild, and it's directed by Jean-Marc Vallée, who also directed
a lot of biopics, aren't there?
Yeah, well, exactly, exactly. All of sort of differing levels of quality. Let's just say that much. But it is starring the polarizing, let's just say, Reese Witherspoon, who you're not a big fan of.
No.
Now, I think this might change your mind a little bit. This
really?
Film. She is completely stripped back. She's not wearing makeup, or at least she's made to look like she's not wearing makeup. You never know. And she just is completely in this role. She's, you know, right there in it. And the directing style obviously helps that. Now, I've gone completely blank, but the director's previous film with Matthew... I've gone
no idea
completely blank.
No idea what.
But about HIV and AIDS crisis... Oh, gosh.
Oh, the telly movie one.
No. Matthew McConaughey starred in it.
I know that one.
So he's kind of got a history of shooting these sort of slow-ish kind of deliberate films sort of in a country setting. And it's just beautiful. He's a French director.
Right.
And this one, you sort of, it's one of the ones you can either go with it, and it's kind of a journey film.
Yep.
So if you're on the journey with it, you're great. If you're sort of bucking against it, then you might not get much out of it. But I actually quite loved it, really.
Okay.
Yeah, and I thought she was very strong in it. not quite strong enough to win at the Oscar, but...
Was she nominated?
Yeah, she was. But, yeah.
But the film was
a bit more of a token. I don't think so with this one, no. But it did get a few noms in the other categories.
Okay.
But, yes, we'll get into some more film soon. I've got way too much to talk about, but we're going to get into some messages right now on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
It was a great track from Hello, Goodbye from the album Everything is Debatable.
Loved it.
A near-death experience, it's called, David. Now, I love the title of the album, Everything is Debatable, which kind of fits with our show, doesn't it?
It does. Everything is debatable.
Debatable, and we love doing it on here, really. Now, another film, you are listening to Sunday Arts Magazine, by the way.
On Joy, no.
On Joy. And the lovely Eric and Athol have messaged in saying, hello, gentlemen. Like yourselves, Athol and I love Grand Budapest Hotel should definitely win Best Movie at the Oscars. Now, there is some very strong competition, so what was sort of alluded to before. So American Sniper, no, not going to win. But Birdman,
yes,
I think, is a very good chance, and Boyhood is probably the favourite.
That's what all the critics are saying in America, that will win the best film.
I wouldn't mind. It is a very strong film. It's a beautiful film, but I really do think Grand Budapest is just a more cohesive, stronger, just a perfect film. I couldn't change it. You know, I wouldn't. If I could change it, I wouldn't.
Right.
Whereas Boyhood, I guess you could tinker with the editing, make it a bit shorter.
Well, they've had long enough to think about it, haven't they?
Yes, they have. Now, another film I got to see was a new one featuring the lovely, gorgeous, redheaded wonder, Julianne Moore, who she's a constant performer and
always does a great job.
Yes.
She's a really wonderful actor and has never won Academy Award.
No, she's had a few nominations over the years, but more of those sort of, she's done well, sort of a, I don't want to say token, but kind of is token nominations.
More
that she's,
the second or third run, more exactly, character exactly. Actor. And I thought in Single Man she was brilliant.
Stunning.
That film was just sublime.
Perfection, that film was. Oh, Colin Firth, we'll get onto that again. Ooh, oh, we love him, don't we? But this one, honestly, it is a little bit of an Oscar bait kind of film. It is dealing with Alzheimer's, early onset Alzheimer's, to be specific. So it is one of those films where she does get this meaty role to sort of play with and really get into the mind of the character and express that to the audience. So, you know, I don't want to sound too cynical, but it is one of those films that does get noticed Oscar time.
And I think it's her turn. And that's what happens a lot with the Oscars, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's all of a sudden somebody as good as her, there's almost a sympathy vote in a roundabout way.
Yeah.
Unless there was somebody totally outstanding that would overshine her. But it sounds as if she's doing a brilliant job in this anyway.
Just absolutely amazing. Mm. And, you know, and Reese Witherspoon is actually nominated for Best Actress in Leading Role.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I said before, she is strong, but I think Julianne Moore, she is the favourite, and she did take out the Golden Globe for it.
Yep.
So I think she's pretty much a shoo-in for it. But it is... getting to the film itself, it is quite strong. It's co-directed and also it's an adaptation from a book as well. So it's got that sort of strong literary connection as well. And Alec Baldwin, he's always very charming. He plays the husband in it. He sleepwalks through it a little bit, but, you know, his charm gets him by.
Yeah. and he does quite a few films like that where he's not the lead. Like the one that Cate Blanchett, the Woody Allen film a couple of years ago, he had a part in that, and it was a smaller part in the beginning, and then he wasn't in it near the end. I like the fact that he is mixing it up a bit, you know, with his TV and his film roles, and taking on fairly meaty roles as well, which is
good.
He's
always dependable. He's a good Baldwin. Word of dishonour from the film, Kristen Stewart. I don't know how she keeps getting roles, honestly. She plays her daughter, Alice's daughter. I don't know where to start with her. She just plays plays her roles the same way every time.
Yeah.
And she's just
Do
lifeless.
I know her?
Who from the Twilight series.
Say no more.
Yeah.
And boring as a person as well, isn't she?
Yes.
So, and I think it is the legacy of the fact that she was in those Twilight films and they were so big, and there would be an audience that would go and see it just because she's in it.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a real shame. I thought she was a very strong child actor, especially in Panic Room with
Jodie Foster.
Thank you. She was very strong in that, but she just doesn't seem to have progressed.
I think that stardom, she didn't cope with it very well, because it sounds as if she's a very private person.
Yep.
And you're like, and the fame, and the fact is now that she is so famous, even though I forgot who she was, that's how much impact she has on me. And just seeing her being interviewed and seeing her on the red carpet, you know, like, maybe I'm being a little bit too judgmental, but damn it, that's the way I am.
She just seems she's bored with the whole situation, really.
Yeah, and why does she, you know, like, almost why does she keep on doing it?
Yep, I agree completely.
You know, as who she is, that's why she's getting the roles.
Now, that's sort of my film wrap-up for the week, but we are going to get into more Oscar talk maybe next week or the week after, and I'll give you my predictions then.
Right, okay, because it's February, isn't it? Do you know what date in February? Yeah, I think it's sort of late, not early.
February 22nd, so we do have a little bit of time. So, yes, I'll get into my predictions.
Yep.
I'll put it that way. And
we'll put them up on Facebook so that you can't change it, Brendan Michael Bale. It will be there for us all to see.
Well, I'm getting very close to locking them in, so I'm excited to put it out there.
Okay.
And see if you agree with me.
Okay.
But just saying, J.K. Simmons will definitely take home the Best Supporting Actor.
Right.
I think he is absolutely brilliant in Whiplash. So that's my prediction. If it's still showing, I don't know if it's still showing in Australia, but if you can, go see it.
Okay.
Just an astounding movie. Now, change of pace. You got to go to the opening night of Somersault.
Yes.
The new, what would you call it, an arts festival? Music?
It is an arts festival, and it takes on a little bit of everything.
Yep.
And that's what is so wonderful about it. And it's within the arts precinct in Melbourne. It started on Friday night with the launch, but it really doesn't get going until about Wednesday of next week. So it's literally from Wednesday to Sunday each week, so Monday and Tuesday night being the nights they don't have it on. And it's mostly outdoors, and pretty much everything is free.
Yeah, and that's a great thing,
which is really, really lovely. Mm. There's state government funding from it, but they also went out and got they equaled the funding they got from the state government with corporate and people sort of gave money to this project as well. And it looks like it's going to be around now for, this is the first year. It's called Somersault. And it's behind all the buildings. So it's behind the Arts Centre, it's behind NGV, it's in the side street next to the Melbourne Theatre Company, and where the art school is as well. That's blocked off, and there's some really interesting and great local stuff as well, and if you can see them free and at better times of night, where it's 7-8 o'clock instead of seeing people perform at 11 o'clock at night. Women of Soul in particular is a collective of soul singers here in Melbourne, and I personally know a couple of them that have done it over the years, and the forefront of it, the main person of it, is Chelsea Wilson, which we play her a little bit here on Sunday Arts Magazine. She's an amazing soul singer, and I love the fact that she stuck to her guns with all that style, and there's different people that she brings in and out of the group, Women of Soul, so they're playing. There's also one called Scotch and Soda, which is an interesting concept of rock and rock and pop, and it's really interesting in that respect. I also like the fact that there's the Melbourne Ballet Company is performing original pieces outside down this side street, down the side of Melbourne Theatre Company. So they're doing that on a couple of different nights, but they're also then presenting two films with dance that are involved with it, and you get there early and you learn some of the routine of the. So it's almost like doing the time walk with Rocky Horror. So you go along, learn, and one of them's a ballet film, Don't Look Back, which is a great ballet film. So you learn a little bit of the routine from it, and then as a film is shown, you then learn. Tina C is back. Do you know Tina C?
I know the name.
She's, tell me a little bit. Well, she's from Texas, and she's a drag performer. She's amazing, and she comes back every year now. She loves it here, and instead of just being part of Midsummer, which she has been in the before, she's doing doing this festival. So it will be fun seeing her in that arena. But then there's already coming out of the Art Centre is all tentacles, you know, these huge blow-ups, and it's this octopus, and off the top of the Melbourne Theatre Company's building is a dinosaur, and, you know, like, there's all these amazing blow-up figures all along the street. So,
well, I had to ask about that last night, because I headed along to the Rhonda Butchmore Coutures of the Art Centre.
Yeah.
Amazing time with Rhonda Butchmore, that is.
Yeah.
But she explained to me what the tentacles were, because I had no idea. I thought there was, you know, an alien invasion or something happening to Melbourne, but no, that is part of Some Salt as well.
Yeah, exactly. Incredible. So they're doing some really good things, and there's the food carts that you can, you know, like, eat and drink on the street as well. So that's just a snapshot of it. And there's an amazing app where you follow the world of two people. One's a seagull, and they're not two people, but one's a seagull and one's somebody that was out late the night before. And the app, so go to Somersault, I think it's somersault.com, and check it out, and download the app, and it fills you in on what you've missed out on the night before. Yep. And also telling you where they're going to be that particular night and the things you should do and whatever. So just Google it. It will be easy to find. Somersault. And as I said, it's pretty much free here in Melbourne for the next few weeks.
Yeah, so you can look it up and see which ones are free. So it's good to give it a bit of a push, because, you know, free events are great to say take your family, because it is a sort of a family event as well.
Exactly.
I'm sure there are some more adult slanted shows as well. But, I think it's a great... We do have a lot of festivals in Melbourne, but I don't think we can ever have enough. And this is a great one that's come along.
Absolutely. It's a really good, and it's the first year of it as well, exactly. So it will develop into something really strong.
Now, before we go to next song, I did get a message in just asking what the Julianne Moore film was. It is called Still Alice,
right?
Which is kind of a play on, you know, her losing her identity, unfortunately, through the film, and sort of wondering to herself, am I still who I am?
It's a tough one,
very
isn't
tough one. You are listening to Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine with David and Brendan.
Joy.
The lovely Kimbra here on Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine. Great track for a Sunday afternoon. Are you having fun, David?
Of course I am, Brendan. we've spoken a lot about film today, so we're moving on.
We are moving on already. I could talk about film
build
all
a
day, you know.
And get over it, Brendan.
By the way, that song was called "Love in High Places" from The Golden Echo. Kimbra, she's so talented. We'll claim her as a New Zealander. We'll claim her anyway, as we do with most stars from there.
No. Just say she's from New Zealand, but she lives here in Melbourne.
Exactly. Yeah. Now we are going to introduce a wonderful man. I don't know.
Oh, do you call him wonderful?
I do, but I don't know where to start in categorising what he actually does, because he has so many bows, strings in his bow. But I'm going to call him an author and now performer, Mr. Daniel Whithouse. Thank you for coming in to Joy 94.9.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So what would you call yourself at the moment, anyway?
I call myself a challenging homophobia educator, and I use any means to kind of get the message across. So that might be writing or performing or speaking or training, whatever that might be.
Now, we're going to talk more about you as an artist, because it's an arts program, but we also love to find out who you are, and that's what this show is all about. So give us a bit of a breakdown of, you know, like, because what you've done that's got you to this moment in time is a great story.
Yeah, well, I've been a professional poofter for the last, you know, 20 years. So I've been doing LGBTI work. I started off challenging homophobia in Geelong schools back in the late 1990s. Did that in an all-boys Catholic school, and that was...
How did that go down?
It went down well, and that's why I'm still doing it 20 years later. If it hadn't have, I might have kind of just been, you know, been ashes and, you know, and a shadow of myself.
But why did you do it? You know, like, is it what you had been trained to do, or...?
Well, I was a a volunteer with the Gay and Lesbian Youth Project down there in the mid-1990s, and every young person without fail was saying that they hated school because it was SHIT or crap, and that they didn't want to go to school anymore, but it wasn't because of the content. And so what I wanted to do was to find out ways in which I could get into local schools and make those safer places. Now, this was back in the day when that was almost impossible. So I sent around a letter to all of the schools and said, hey, who wants to challenge homophobia and who wants to support their students? And one of the schools that got back to me was an all-boys Catholic school.
I find that interesting.
Everybody does, and that's why when it was successful, people couldn't... It went bananas at the time. And so really the story of, you know, what I'm going to talk about in my show is how I went from doing that work in Geelong and then went flying around to different developing countries challenging homophobia, but how that work ultimately brought me back to Australia to do a 266-day drive around rural Australia. So to challenge homophobia one cup at a time, but really just to find out how mainstream Australia could do better in supporting LGBTI people in every nook and cranny of our country.
Now, from that came a book.
Cool. Yeah, so I ended up writing a book called Beyond Priscilla, One Gay Man, One Gay Truck and One Big Idea, and that was launched in January of last year as part of the Midsummer Festival, and that was about, I guess, what's it like to jump in a truck and drive around and just speak with hundreds and hundreds of people and to look into their eyes and hear their stories about how homophobia impacts on, you know, their everyday lives, but also what does mainstream Australia have to say? And there were so many good yarns from the tour, like good, bad and ugly, and I felt that rather than just me kind of holding on to them and doing them part of teacher presentations or radio interviews, whatever it might be, I wanted to actually put them into a format where people could actually sit down and absorb them in a different way, and that was why, you know, a book was the way.
How hard was it to write a book? It wasn't your first book, was it?
No, look, I'd written a book for teachers and health professionals called Beyond That So Gay, about all the work that I've done in schools. But this book was really different because it was about how could I convey the stories that I would, you know, talk to people I know about and put them down on paper. And I found that really challenging because, you know, if you'd said to me when I was growing up, you know, you should write a book and you're going to become a writer, it was something I really rebelled against. But I saw it as this opportunity to get to a different audience. And I felt that was important because driving around the country, so many people said, look, we hear about people in Melbourne and Sydney, but we don't hear about LGBTI, you know, stories anywhere else. And it's been really interesting to have people, you know, who I've never met before sending me, you know, emails and messages and, you know, Twitter stuff and the rest of it saying, I feel like my story is being reflected back at me. I'm relating to these stories and, you know, and I'm kind of reminiscing, but I'm feeling bad, but I'm feeling good because I'm not alone. And I can't, it's bringing up a lot of stuff for people, but invariably it seems that that's a good thing.
And how did that fit with your expectations of what you went out setting to achieve?
In terms of the book, it exceeded my expectations because, you know, I was hoping to get the book out there, but I was hoping that more people than my friends and family would actually buy it and read it. And that was the case. I mean, that's the feedback. There are people who I've never met who are picking up that book and reading it and talking to one another about it. I mean, the other day there were two journalists on Twitter recommending my book to each other and I'd never met them before. And I was just kind of like, I've just, you know, hit that. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But the writing process, you had a publisher.
Yes, I did. I did.
Which is a rare thing these days.
Well, it is a rare thing. And I actually did for both of my books, I did something. I was told by a professor in the US, he said, I've written books to a deadline with a publisher and I've written books without a deadline. And if you're writing them, all I can say is don't have a publisher and a deadline. I thank him for that advice, but it was it meant there was quite a long time to find a publisher thereafter. But once I found my publisher for my second book, Beyond Priscilla, he actually said, look, I love the idea, I love the stories, but your format gets in the way, we need to do a major rewrite. So he sent me back to the drawing board and I had to completely restructure that. And because I'd spent 6 months writing that every day in a library in Berlin. And I kind of came back and I was, you know, all guns blazing and then came back and it's just like, you need to go and do this and, you know, work your day job, but go home every night and restructure this book. It was a tough slog, but 3 months later, I got it, and people seem to enjoy the format, which is great.
Now, the other important part of it is a cover to the any book, because it's the most important thing when you are sitting there in that bookstore and you see that cover. The cover had instant impact, didn't it?
It did. I mean, for two reasons. I think that the having the word Priscilla in the title piqued people's interest.
Of course.
But I think that because the front cover has kind of a bush setting, but it has a yellow sign with a high hill on it.
It's a sign, a road sign.
A road sign. It's got a couple of bullet holes in it, which is kind of very Australian. And the, you know, I guess the idea was that if you're a gay man driving around the country doing challenging homophobia work in the bush, people will invariably ask you one question: what are you driving, a bus with a shoe on top? Now, that's funny once, that's funny twice, but five or six times for 266 days.
I could imagine.
But what it means is that that's this main cultural reference point for being gay in the bush for so many people. 20 years on, it's now 21 years since it's hit our screens. And so what I wanted to do was to feed into that, because that's kind of like the foot or the high heel in the door. And then the rest of it is, you know, once you read it, it's like, oh, it's actually not what I expect. And it's these real stories, because, you know, I could tell the kind of the ritzy and the big stories, but what I really wanted to get to was the heart of what's happening in rural Australia. What's it like? And not for me to actually tell the stories, for people to tell their stories in their own words. So that's, yeah, been great.
Now we're going to get into the show after we get into a song here on Joy 94.9. Thank you for listening to Sunday Arts Magazine.
Joy.
You are on Joe 94.9. That's one of my favourite bands. They're called Churches, and that's called The Mother We Share. I heard them a couple of years ago at the Laneway Festival.
Okay.
That's great. Yep. Fantastic time.
They
that
are
was.
A good band, yes.
They are very, very good. Yep. Now, we have got Daniel Whithouse to stick around. We're nowhere near finished having a chat about what you're doing, what you've got coming up. So we have talked about your tour around Australia, promoting getting rid of homophobia, basically. And that's led to your books, but now you've got a stage show. Tell us a little bit
stage
about that.
Stage show? Would you call it a stage show?
What would you
show?
Call it? It's sort of a...
I loosely call it a one-man show.
Okay.
So I'll be spending a little bit over an hour, just a touch over an hour. Think of it as the book I'll never write. So it's called Who the Beep is Daniel Whithouse, and it's... I guess the stories that I can't tell in my books, the stories I can't tell
Why
in
can't
classrooms.
Why can't you tell them in the book?
I can't tell them in the book because I guess they would be a little bit adults only, a bit roll in the hay, behind the scenes, and some of the things that if they go into print, it's different than if they're spoken word. So there are stories that I'd like to tell about what goes on behind the scenes that people might not expect. So sometimes people think, oh, it's glamorous, or I'm a gay superhero, or it must be really exciting. And I'm trying to uncover that and say, here's the good, the bad, and the ugly of what happens if you do this work.
Because it would be, you know, like it's nice when it all comes together, but you would have got a lot of really negative vibe out there in those regional areas, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and not even from regional areas. I mean, there's other metro areas. I mean, there's even places and people in places like Melbourne and Sydney. There's the backlash from the LGBTI organisations and community groups over the years that might have thought they knew what I was doing and misunderstood some of the work that I was doing in schools. I mean, one of the stories I'll tell is how the work that I do, which is formally evaluated by Deakin University, was described by one academic as me going into schools, throwing a hand grenade into a classroom and then walking out again. So, you know, it can get pretty emotive when people hear about a gay man going into schools to do my work. And so I really want to shed a light on what some of that is and share that with people. And I guess it's a different format for me. So I've been speaking in front of people. I'm actually an introvert. So I've been speaking in front of people and presenting for many, many years. But what I wanted to do was to try and tell some stories in a different format.
And how do you sort of tackle the critics? Do you sort of just show them and talk about the anecdotes of what you actually see? day to day?
At the heart of my show, it's that I think that you can change the world one cup at a time. And so I'm always a fan of, if someone's got a misunderstanding, I would love to have a chat with them and find out more. So it's not about me trying to show them or do something in response or react or whatever it is. It's just like, obviously, you've missed the point. This is really important. We need to work together. Let's have a cuppa. That's always been my approach. And I think that's one of the reasons why I've been able to stick around for so long.
Has it been aggression towards you? You know, has it been aggressive people where you're like maybe meeting him for a drink in the pub in a country town?
Look, a lot of people believe that most homophobia, and even to this day, you know, in regional and rural areas, most of it's less often aggressive. So it used to be like a lot of people had to say was, look, 10 to 20 years ago, lots of people getting their heads kicked in, or there's some really rough stuff, like horrible, horrible things that are happening to people. But these days, you're less likely to get your head kicked in, which means that rural country towns think that everything's fine. It's not. It just means that homophobia is different. So it doesn't mean that it's not isolating. You know, it doesn't mean that it doesn't maim people's health and well-being, but it just means that that really physical, aggressive, venomous stuff isn't quite happening as much.
I also feel that parents of people from our community are still struggling. Some parents. I actually met this woman who was down from Sydney the other day, who works within the arts, and her daughter has come out to her as a lesbian, and now bringing 24-year-old, bringing a girlfriend, potential girlfriend home, and the mother is really struggling with it. And I was actually getting really angry with her because she was talking to myself and a lesbian friend, and I said, do you realise that you're probably, what you're saying, even though this lesbian friend of mine was saying, that's fine, I'm okay with that, it wasn't. And I was taking it up to her a lot. Instead of her vetting her sort of feelings, you know, like, I said, you know, like, it's a bit insulting what you're saying here, you know, like, that you're struggling with it. Imagine what your daughter is feeling right now, and she would be aware that you're not coping with it.
Yep. And it's one of the reasons why it's so great that there are groups like PFLAB, because we know that when people find out about their offspring, sometimes they don't necessarily cope in the ways in which we'd like them to, and sometimes that you know, they have a point like that on their journey, and we know that if they get a chance to vent and talk about it and talk with other parents, that they actually get to a better place. And it's, you know, I think that PFLAB have often, I've seen them model this really well. It's that if you're a parent who's struggling, think about it. You know, we as, you know, LGBTI folk take time to get used to it ourselves. It makes sense that if a parent, even if they do have LGBTI, you know, contact and friends, it might take them a while. It's just that we mightn't feel as patient or open or think that that's as wonderful as it is when you look at it as a process, I guess.
Yeah. Well, this woman didn't know about PFLAG.
Yeah.
And yell at you. And I get a feeling that her daughter is probably wasn't being as quiet as good with her as she could have been, mm-hmm. by holding her hand a little bit, you know, like, because it's up to us in our community to help our, especially parents, I think, along in that journey.
It's a really good example of what I've found around the country, and it's, a lot of people will say, look, it's better these days, we have things like Glee on TV and everybody's kind of knows someone who's come out. It's one thing to have it on the TV or have it one step removed from you, but when it comes into your sphere and it's kind of, you know, it's in your space, and often it's, you know, parents are okay until it's their child, that's where I think we're at. We've gotten better at having this potential LGBTI-ness around us, but when it steps into our, you know, our everyday lives, we still can't fully predict, you know, what we'd like it to be.
Yep.
We still have some work to do. And you know, and again, that's my approach, is to sit down with people and have a cuppa and just say, you know, where are you at and where would you like to be? And often we know that we when we're coping with things, we don't always come out with great things first and foremost.
What's the one thing you want to achieve with this this show that you're doing?
I want to set the record straight. So I want,
you
people,
are preaching to the converted in a way, aren't you?
Well, I think that you'll find that probably so far, in terms of people who are coming, it's over 50% straight people.
Oh, really?
And allies, sure. Okay. And look, most of my work is in straight and allied communities. It's not in LGBTI communities. And again, I'm trying to set the record straight and say, this is the work that I'm doing. So you might think you know the work that I do. You might think you know who I am, but I actually want to give you some behind the scenes stuff, and I want people to walk away going, we know who this person is, we know what brought them to this point and why they do the work, and we know how he's been able to hold on and do that for 20 years where a lot of people might not have been able to.
Well, it just sounds wonderful. We could talk for another hour, really, about Daniel's show and his work that he's doing. But this one in particular, it is Who the Bleep is Daniel Whithouse? And hopefully, if you do head on to the show, you'll find out a little bit more about Daniel. And it is playing, he'll be at Hares and Hyenas, 28th and the 29th of January, as part of Midsummer.
And it's also a fundraiser for the National Institute for Challenging Homophobia Education, which is an organisation I started 2 years ago for challenging rural homophobia.
Right, and tickets are through Midsummer?
They're through Hares and Hyenas, and you can get them through the Midsummer website as well.
Okay, Daniel, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having
and
me.
And thank you for the wonderful job you're doing out there.
Thank you.
Joy.
You are on Sunday Arts Magazine. We have come to the end of our show again, but it's been what a great show today was. I'm very excited about that. Yeah, Daniel is great to chat
with. He's a wonderful man.
Yes, and he does so much, though. Mm. It sort of puts me to shame.
Most people do. No, you do great things.
Oh, yes, well. Now, do stick around for Mossy and Robert. It's great. It's going to keep
crazy show. Yeah. And a lot of those crazy characters out there. Look at them. They're looking through the window as now. Oh, pulling faces.
If only we could have yesterday once more. But we shouldn't be too nice to Robert, though, should
no,
we?
No, definitely
His
not
head's
nice to Robert.
Explode. Now, do stick around for the news as well. But we had one thing I wanted to talk about exhibition-wise for Midsummer.
Yep.
What a drag. I think I might have mentioned it in passing last week. Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to go today, but it was a little bit hard to get up this morning. But yeah, what a drag. History of Melbourne drag goes into the history of since the, I think it was the 1960s all the way to today.
Right.
And it is at Chapel Off Chapel.
Okay.
Great little venue. And
in the foyer there, is it?
Yeah, I think so. They've had some little drag events there to celebrate. But I'm really excited to check it out. And it is a free exhibit as well, which is fantastic.
Yep.
Because there is such a vast history here. You know, I've only been here 3 years. But, you know,
And it was
it
so
goes
closeted
back so far.
For many, many years. Not closeted so much, but behind closed doors,
yes.
More to the point. And I find all that really fascinating. I've got 101 stories, but we've run out of time.
Oh, we've got a few seconds.
Well, yeah. I live in St Kilda, and this guy who I'd never spoken to, but I've seen him around, handed me a couple of photos one day, and I went, oh, what's this all about? And one of them said, oh, look, this is me as a 19-year-old, I suppose he's in his 70s now, and he was me as a drag performer.
Wonderful.
And you know, like, and it was back in the 60s and 70s, and he's and I was also a waitress as a in drag. He actually said lay girls, but you know, absolutely fascinating.
That's so great. Mm. Well, thank you so much for listening in again, Joy listeners. It is always a pleasure. And well, we won't actually be back next week, so
it's Pride March.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.